Free Speech Radio News. I'm Nadja Middleton at the United Nations.
From Community Radio KGNU in Boulder, Colorado, for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jonica Lafice.
And this is radio station WBAI in New York, where we're into the second hour of Off the Hook, the special edition on this Wednesday night. If you're tuning into the Personal Computer Show, that will not be on this week. It will be on again next week at this time. We're going to be taking phone calls at 212-209-2900. We've been discussing the mass media and its coverage of the war. Now, Mike, you had a very interesting observation during the break.
I mean, I've been sitting here watching this channel called CNN. You may have heard of it.
Yes.
And they've been showing these people in fatigues, a lot of them, not all of them, and they're reporters. But the biggest thing on the screen, as some of them are talking, is the logo of the unit that in which they are embedded.
Unbelievable. that's considered to be like worth a quarter of the screen is the logo of a military unit.
And I was, you know, before they were giving the history of one of these units, it was the first one to kill people in Vietnam or something, the first to do this. All these super units. So that's apparently the big
news. You know, you might be into that kind of thing. That a lot of people are. But the point is, not everybody is. And when that's the only perspective that's shown on television, it kind of gets ingrained in your head as that being the way it is, when it might not necessarily be that way. Okay, we're going to be talking also about the demonstration that took place here in New York last Saturday, which was quite a historic thing. And there was a lot of good that came out of that and some bad that came out of that as well. I'd like to focus on in the next hour. Let's first take a few phone calls, see what people's perspectives are on the mass media and other kinds of war coverage. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Holy cow, I'm the first call.
Yeah. Turn down your radio.
It's off.
Okay.
I'm driving, so you know I have to hear when you put me on. So.
Okay, well, be careful.
How you doing, Emmanuel?
Good, how are you?
And the rest of the fellas. This is Adam. I just want to say you're absolutely right about the media. It's you know, you're saying everything you're going to say. I think that the fact that they call it Operation Iraqi Freedom is ludicrous. They should call it Operation Iraqi Oil, you know. And guess who's calling me on the other line?
I don't know.
Rebel!
Okay, well, we certainly don't want to hear that.
He's so far away, he wants me to call for him. So, yeah, and I was going to say there is another radio station that does have the same sentiment as you and I and the rest of the BAI people, and that is WWRL.
WWRL? And,
that's AM radio. They're the originator of Gary Bird from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the same sentiment. Felipe Luciano, the ex-young lord and former Fox News reporter, it sounds exactly like you would not believe it. I mean, that this is what's great. It's coming back, but unfortunately, this is a flag-waving, hateful nation we have overall in general. And that's why the networks work for the government, like you're saying, like your friend on the phone,
Bernie.
Peter, was it?
Bernie S. is on the phone.
Bernie.
Yes.
Yes, Bernie's absolutely right. It's all a publicity campaign, a watchdog like they should be. They should be monitoring us. We broke the convention by declaring war. And here they're talking about Geneva Convention being waived by Iraq by displaying the soldiers or torturing them.
Here's the way I look at it. In war, I don't understand this whole concept of rules of war, where people, if they wave a white flag, they can't trick you and shoot you, or they have to wear uniforms. They can't shoot you if they're civilians, otherwise they're breaking the rules of war. You know, war. Do you know what war is? It's basically trying to kill people. I don't know how there can be rules that say, okay, you're violating this. It's not a fair fight to start with. It just seems so bizarre and ludicrous that we would actually talk about rules. I mean, I know these rules exist. I know they've been agreed upon, but I find the whole thing to be really obscene.
Didn't you say a moment ago?
Did he call the UN irrelevant?
I'm sorry?
He called the UN irrelevant.
Bush did, yes.
So the Geneva Convention was a UN institution, not an American one. and if he avoids using the Geneva Convention for his needs, then what do you think is going to happen when Americans are sending 10,000-pound bombs on top of the heads of the Iraqi troops or civilians?
Mm-hmm.
Those troops are innocent because they are working for Saddam. They're like, you know, it's like Bush, our soldiers are innocent too, no matter what they do. They're doing what they're told. This is the way it is. This is war. There are no rules. It's about murder on
both
sides.
Yeah, you know, I've always had a problem with people just doing what they're told without thinking about the consequences. No matter what side they're on, if they're on the side of good, they're on the side of bad, you know, it's all a matter of perspective. But I always think people need to think as individuals. And, of course, that flies in the face of everything military. I guess I just have a big problem with the military, no matter where it is. Anyway, thanks for that call. Thanks for that call. All right,
you're welcome.
And
bye
drive
bye.
Safely. It's a weird thing. It really is. All the
you were making the comparison earlier about the sport analogy,
mm-hmm.
as far as, and that's basically what's going on here. I mean, we're looking at diagrams and plays of how this is gonna work.
Oh my God, look at that! Yeah, on CNN right now, they're standing over a little playing field.
Exactly,
a football game.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that's what it is to them.
With the neutral commentator, the former NATO general Wesley Clark. It's one of those two white men.
Yeah,
I don't know which.
That guy, he lives at CNN. He's always prattling on about one thing or another. Okay, our phone number 212-209-2900. Let's get your opinions. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good. You're still over a number of years now.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we've got a denial of service attack against Al Jazeera. You're aware of that?
Yeah, we've been talking about that.
So here's the thing. We've got MSNBC, we've got CNBC, CNN, and Fox on the Internet with a denial of service attack against them.
Well, I've heard there have been denial of service attacks against all kinds of different news agencies
or
governments.
Right
I don't know about at this very moment. I've heard that there have been denial of service. I mean, the whole thing is reprehensible regardless of who they're trying to silence. But, you know, I think you're right. I think there's very little in the way of interference with the mainstream news. It's the alternative news which is suffering and which whose view is not getting out. And you have to wonder why is that seen as such a threat?
Well, here's the question. What's the name of this show?
What's the name of this show?
Yeah.
Off the Hook.
Okay. So where are the hackers? Let's get these net shops that are basically propaganda operations. Mm-hmm. Off the air. Why not? You can't say it. I can.
Okay, you see, that's the whole thing. The theory that hackers are somehow the only ones that can do things like this. To launch a denial of service attack, that requires very little in the way of hacker skill. You need a script. You just need to run a program, and you need to have some kind of bandwidth, and you can take anybody down. You can take the White House down if you want.
The script monkey's rocking.
Yeah, well, you know, the script monkeys are the people that don't think about what they're doing. They just, type commands, and that's it, and they consider themselves hackers. Hackers aren't interested in destroying. They're not interested in silencing. They're interested in learning and building and creating.
Good. Hackers be cool. Let's call them the script monkeys.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't support silencing anybody, even if it's Fox. That's just the way I feel. I support having all kinds of different views out there. And sometimes that involves views you don't agree with. In fact, often it does. And if you can't deal with that, you have to ask yourself, what exactly, why do you see that as a threat? Thanks for that call. Go ahead, Mike.
Part of the issue is that a lot of these large companies just have a lot more resources to keep their internet sites up than some of the smaller sites. So, for example, the Indy Media Center is just kind of been recently a victim of its own success. No one can afford to run the server with the level of service that it would need. Disney has no such problem.
Well, let's talk about that. Now, what's the problem that IndyMedia is facing right now as far as the actual site? We're being deluged. I believe it's being run out of Seattle right now.
Yeah, it's a popular site, which mm-hmm. is good news. I guess we should say it's web address indymedia.org,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, anyone can go and post whatever they have to say, but the server that it's running on is old. It needs, you know, replacement parts. It needs more bandwidth. It needs this. It needs that. And, you know, it's all a volunteer operation. There's, you know, very little, if no money around. So that's what happens.
Yeah. So how can people help if they have resources that they like to offer or something like this?
I don't know.
You don't know. Well, okay, how about you mail us, oth@2600.com, and we'll pass along to people in various offices, and hopefully it'll get to the right people, because it's important to keep these alternative views out there. It really is. It's vital. It's essential, especially at times like this. Go ahead, Leo.
I'm pretty sure that indymedia.org, indymedia.org, has supporters information on their website. So if you want to find out how to send them money, I'm pretty sure. I've
okay.
been there a few.
Well, okay, but we don't know the email address here. So if someone out there sees that email address, feel free to tell us or just email it yourself. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. Now, I want to talk about the demonstration that took place on Saturday. Now, I was there. Mike, I know you were there.
Yeah.
It was a marked contrast to what happened on February 15th, as far as just the overall way it came about. On February 15th, if you recall, there was a rally near the UN, and what the police did was block all entry to the rally so that it was almost impossible to get to it. And you had situations where people were penned in all over the place throughout Midtown Manhattan, and there were numerous instances. In fact, it was there was a videotape being circulated by indie media to the major networks, which actually made it onto some news programs, of police charging their horses into crowds and basically just acting like real jerks for no particular reason, apparently, because they were doing what they were told to do. And keep these people from getting to the rally, which they, for the most part, succeeded in doing. It didn't stop however many hundreds of thousands of people showed up. Did we get a final crowd estimate there?
The number that I believe is 500,000 people.
You see, it's very hard because since they couldn't congregate, they were just in the street. But then again, people who were normally in the street were also in the street, so I don't know how it was even possible to count them. But anyway, on Saturday, we had a different situation where... the United for Peace and Justice, that organization, was able to get a permit to march down Broadway. I was amazed when they pulled this off. But they got the permit, and it was almost like the city was trying to make up for the black eye it got on February 15th by actually being cooperative and allowing this to happen. I have a real problem with asking permission to demonstrate, but that's how it works in this country, unfortunately. Basically, it started where? Times Square or just south of Times Square?
That neighborhood. I mean, there was just so many people that mm-hmm. there was no single starting point that everyone could possibly fit at.
Yeah, it was really just people joined in along Broadway. The entire width of Broadway, all the way down to 4th Street, really, where people turned and went to Washington Square Park, was packed full of people for hours and hours as they marched down. That's why I think it was significantly more than the people that showed up on February 15th. It just was huge. And people from all over were taking part in this. And, you know, I consider it a marked contrast because it really seemed so much better. It really seemed so much nicer. The police were smiling and chatting. And, you know, there wasn't the kind of intimidation that, you know, I saw on February 15th. All kinds of people on the side were, you know, waving at us and smiling and, you know, workers inside buildings. I didn't see any counter-demonstrators. Not that that would have been a bad thing, but I didn't see them.
There were a few,
and of course, all the networks went to those people and gave them so much airtime. You know, three people on the side and 500,000 people walking by, however many, and they gave equal time in that regard. That's just the way they choose to do things. The funny thing is, we made it all the way down to Washington Square Park, and there was... as soon as you got there was a recording being played. Did you hear this? A recording from the police?
I was actually sitting about a block away from that recording for about half an hour.
It must have driven you mad.
Oh, yes.
It was hilarious. There was basically this cop with a Brooklyn accent that was saying, "The march is now over. Please leave the area so that other marchers may participate as you have just done," or something along those lines.
May complete their march.
May complete their march.
As you have done.
Yes. And, you know, at first I was kind of annoyed by this because I thought, hey, they're trying to, like, you know, break this thing up. And then I thought it was funny because they were, you know, they really just weren't trying to, like, move anybody out of there. They just wanted people to, you know, kind of try and disperse, but there wasn't any actual hostile action on their part. And, you know, I was looking at all the cops during this, and I realized, you know, how they just seemed to be blending into the crowd. They were, you know,
in some cases more than others.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that. The thing is, they were being friendly. They were talking amongst themselves. It just, they seemed so much more relaxed than they did on February 15th. And, you know, everybody was having a great time hanging out in Washington Square Park, you know, chatting, talking, passing out leaflets, selling T-shirts, all that kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes people are doing things they don't have permits for, like using megaphones, you know, and that's fine. You know, democracy survives. That's what it's all about. But it was a great feeling. Until 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock rolled around. Apparently that was the hour that the permit expired for the march. And bam, right at that hour, like clockwork, all the cops suddenly started to surround the park and keep people from getting across the street. All these horses appeared out of nowhere, motorcycles, you know, riot gear, everything. I was incredulous. Everybody was having such a good time. It was a beautiful day. We were all getting along. There were no problems that I could see. And then all of a sudden, like a switch was thrown, all these cops started to surround peaceful demonstrators. And it really changed the entire dynamic of the day. It created this confrontation where none had existed before, or at least very little had existed before. I mean,
it's not quite true. I mean, some friends of mine were beat up at about 2:30 by police officers.
Well, give us the details. What exactly happened?
I don't want to say too much because I don't want to.
Well, say enough so that
I don't want to incriminate anybody except.
Well, don't give any names. Don't give any locations.
A group of people.
500,000 people. I don't think they'll figure out who they are.
Well, a group of people left the main march and walked westward along one of the side streets. And apparently this is the worst thing you can ever conceivably do. So they were attacked by police officers, including some undercover police officers who did not bother to identify themselves.
I saw those guys. They all look the same. I don't mean to sound nasty here, but they all dress in the same white T-shirt and baseball cap. What? I mean, come on. Who are you trying to... Why not just get a uniform? You know,
well,
everybody knows you're a cop.
Well, apparently not everyone. And, you know, if you get beat up by a cop, then, of course, you get charged with assault. So there are people...
For what? Blocking the fist with your face?
The charge won't stick, I believe, in the cases I'm familiar with, but it's just a real hassle that people don't need.
Is there any video of this? Because there are plenty of video cameras all over the place. Lots of things are captured.
I don't know. We're trying to find out.
Okay, that's very important in situations like this. In fact, the National Lawyers Guild was around asking people if you have any signs of police brutality to contact them, to give them as much information as possible, because we have to prevent this kind of a thing. Now,
we like playing on this show with phone tree systems, trying to get to a human.
Mm-hmm.
For a real challenge, I would encourage people to try and file a complaint about brutality with the New York Police Department.
Well, right there, there's a problem, because who are you filing the complaint with?
Well, there's allegedly this body called the Civilian Complaint Review Board.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage anyone to try and get anywhere with it.
I got involved in this conversation. It was great. We were all hanging out in a street corner. I was on the northwest corner of Washington Square Park. We were across the street. And it was me and a bunch of other people, and I got into this long conversation with this 75-year-old a woman who was terrific. She just came down there, was, you know, part of this whole rally, and she just had the most interesting points, like, you know, why are these policemen seeing me as a threat to them? You know, why am I being placed in this situation where I'm told I can't cross this street because I'm going to be a threat if I do? And she was very upfront about it. She confronted some of the cops saying, you know, why are you doing this? And to their credit, some of the cops actually, you know, engaged in sort of a, you know, semi-debate about the whole issue. This one in particular was talking about how his friend had just been beaten up by some of the demonstrators and taken to the emergency room. And again, I asked the same question. If such a thing happens, I want to know about it. Let's see the documentation. Let's see. There's got to be video of this somewhere. There's so many people with video cameras. There has to be some kind of a report that this person was rushed to the hospital, that he, you know, had to get all these stitches. If such a thing happens, it's got to be condemned, obviously. I have a lot of trouble believing something like that, though, based just on the emotional aspect of telling somebody that this just happened to a friend of yours. In the crowd of people that I saw, such a thing, if such a thing were to happen, if there was a couple of lunatics that would actually do something like that, they would quickly be quelled by the rest of the people.
Well, you can't do that, because if you touch the person, mm-hmm. a lot of times the fights are started by undercover cops, so if you touch the person, then you've all of a sudden assaulted a police officer.
Well, if it's an undercover cop that does not identify himself, that actually tries to start something with somebody and the person responds, it's not the same thing as attacking a police officer. It's, you know, you think you're responding to an idiot.
Well, they prosecute it the same.
Okay, but we don't know that's what happened. We don't have any information. And what I'm saying is when something like this happens, it's very important for all the documentation to come forward. We shouldn't be saying that that's impossible, that couldn't have happened. No, it's possible, it could have happened, but let's find out if it did. You know, let's find out all the situations where somebody was attacked in any particular way, cop or protester, and let's get the facts out there. Because right now you have people just saying things like, my friend was assaulted, he got all these stitches. But until you have the actual evidence that that really happened, it's just an emotional type of a thing. You're just getting an emotional reaction. And, I didn't want to say that to the cop because, it struck me that that's what he was trying to do. And maybe he believed it. Maybe he didn't know the facts himself, or maybe he did know the facts, and maybe we don't want to hear those facts. The important thing is to get all the information out there. One thing he said, though, which, convinced me that he wasn't that bad a person, he said that, there's always bad people in any crowd, and that includes the cops. You know, for someone to actually make that step and say that, volunteer that information, I don't know if he's actually going to testify against somebody, one of his fellow officers, if he does something, but to actually admit it up front like that to protesters, I think, takes a degree of guts. And let's hope there are more people like that. All right, 212-209-2900 is our phone number. If you had any particular experiences at the demonstration or anything involving mass media, we'd like to hear about it. And let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, this is about the style of the mass media. Generally, it seems that, I'm in my 50s, and when I was a kid, we used to play that game called, Guns or War, where everyone runs around like the local empty lot, and one person's like a lieutenant or something like that. And it seems like the very lingo that most of the American mass media uses, especially network, is geared towards, say, like a 15-year-old. It's geared towards 15-year-olds playing let's go get them, let's go kill them kind of lingo. And they're doing that deliberately, because those people that are talking like that don't talk like that when they go home. I mean, that it's like Marshall McLuhan said, the media is the message or the massage. I mean, it's very, very cleverly calculated to appeal to, like high school kids, because then they'll enlist. Because it's their style.
Did I hear right that MTV refused, somebody told me this, MTV refused to air any kind of anti-war public service announcement.
I've heard that too, yeah.
And people got around it, actually, by simply going to the local cable systems and having them air the same advertisement during, on MTV's channel during a local break. But the thing is, MTV airs recruitment ads for the Army, for the Navy.
Well, they're part of the big machine. And they're not something in any way that's about human freedom or thinking. I mean, they're about selling their product and achieving that kind of cynical manipulation of the public. And it's done very, very skillfully. And it's sad that the audience it's aimed at is like an audience of mostly poor kids and working class kids who maybe have an argument with their father or something and just want to get away from home, so they join the Army. And they think it's going to be like running around with their friends playing guns or something.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people do get trapped into that. I know there are a lot of unhappy people in the military. There's no question about that. I hear from a lot of them. A lot of them send us email. It's hard. Imagine being an individual thinker in such an environment where you have to not question and have to follow all kinds of orders that you might not understand or agree with.
Well, then they have a nervous breakdown. I mean, I've known people when I was younger that had happened to. They went in, because I'm from a working class background, and a lot of people went in kind of just thinking that, like, they were doing what they thought was right. And then when they got in, they realized they had been conned. And I'm talking way back to Vietnam. And, like, cousins of mine came home heroin addicts and all kinds of things. And they had never suspected the way they were going to be treated and manipulated by their own government. And another thing, it's like when I was a kid, we were always taught how, you know, during the American Revolution, the English had these, like, stiff formations, and how great we Americans were for fighting a guerrilla war against the English during the Revolutionary War. And now the Iraqis are fighting a guerrilla war, and our public relations, I mean, the American public relations apparatus, is very much like the old British Empire, the way it talks about them, you know, calling them, like, unfair animals, all this stuff. They're fighting a guerrilla war because our country is the one of our leaders that are manipulating this kind of grand-scale apparatus of huge mechanisms, I mean, bombs and all kinds of technology. So people are pulling every little desperate action they can.
Yeah, I mean, ask yourself, if there was a foreign army that was far superior to anything that we had in this country, and they were basically just moving, you know, slowly but surely across the entire country, you think maybe you might try all kinds of skullduggery and trickery to defeat them. You won't necessarily play by the rules of war. You engage in all kinds of, you know, who knows what, just anything to stop them, or just to at least make a last stand. I mean, you know, let's not be surprised by this.
Yeah, it surprises me that people are so surprised. But I think people the president is being totally disingenuous. Everything he does is about manipulating. I mean, he's an old New England Yankee, and there he is pretending he's this Southerner. He's not. He's from this rich New England family, and he goes off, you know, talking like that in this calculated way, like he's always, you know, went to barbecues all his life and things like that. That ain't the case with him. I mean, that's all public relations that he tricks everyone with.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it's all about, is trickery. Anyway, thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bob.
Bye. 212-209-2900. Bernie, are you still there?
Yes, I am. The gentleman who just called, he mentioned something interesting about people. You chimed in on that, where people got around the MTV anti-war commercial ban by purchasing ads on their local cable system. Well, a group of Quakers here in Philadelphia just a few weeks ago tried the same thing with Comcast Corporation, which runs the cable monopoly here in Philadelphia. And Comcast refused to broadcast their ad on the cable system. And the reason was that Comcast said that the information in the ad could not be verified. And that was basically the claim in the ad was that the Bush administration has made some false claims in justifying this war. And, well, we've all known that to be the case with forged documents about Iraq trying to obtain uranium from Africa, that sort of thing, which the president mentioned during a presidential, you know, State of the Union address, and this was forged documents.
That's right, that's right.
But anyhow, this group of Quakers, which have a long, you know, multi-decade, multi-century history back to the birth of this country and promoting peace, they were prevented by Comcast Corporation from airing a pro-peace ad here on the Philadelphia cable monopoly system. So that doesn't always work in all markets. It didn't work here in Philadelphia.
All those damn Mormon ads, you know, are talking about virtue of the family and traditional lifestyles and things like that. No problem there. Those get aired every place, you know. It's nothing against Mormons. I'm just saying, you know, when you preach something that's mainstream and that goes along with the way the powers that be want things to be, then you have no problem at all. But if you start, it's like, you know, with these stickers, these war stickers that we're handing out. Basically, they get ripped down very quickly. But you try putting up something that says "United We Stand," perhaps. That doesn't that does not get torn down. That doesn't get torn down because the people that that aren't opposed to being united, but they're opposed to you know, being stupid. They're also opposed to ripping down views of people they might not agree with 100%. And you have to wonder, you know, the people being silenced here are the ones who are speaking a particular view. That particular view is seen as dangerous. I see the people who want to quell any kind of alternate opinion, I see them as dangerous. And they're the ones that really have to be fought. Like,
baffles me why people, it really baffles me, Emmanuel, why people think that being anti-war is the same as being anti-patriotic.
If anything, it's more patriotic.
Exactly. I consider myself a very patriotic person. I love this country. I don't like how this our government has changed our rules of law and other things. But I'm a constitutional conservative in many ways, and I'm disgusted with how things are going lately. But I love this country. This is a beautiful country. It has so much promise with the way our government was formed and designed to operate. I think questioning how it's going now is highly patriotic. And anyone who's protesting the war on those grounds is being accused of being anti-American or anti-patriotic. And it's really the opposite is the case.
Yeah, and I think it's very low for somebody to take that approach, to call somebody anti-American because you disagree with them and you think that what they're doing is detrimental. I mean, you know, it's a very low blow, and it's something that you know, it might work to get people to rally around you without thinking. But you're not really backing up what it is you believe in. I've had many, you know, calm conversations with people that completely disagree with me, and that's fine. But once you start trying to label people, once you start trying to shut them up, and you try to keep other people from hearing other views, that's when you're turning into something that I think maybe the whole point is, you know, those are the kinds of people that are really a threat. They're the people that that really are against what this nation is supposedly standing for.
Have you seen all the negative comments about Michael Moore's statement at the Oscars?
Oh, thank God for somebody like Michael Moore. You know, here's the thing, okay? You got all these chuckleheads out there that say, oh, these celebrities, they should not be allowed to speak out, and they should not be allowed to have opinions because, you know, so many people take them seriously. I mean, you know, if you have a way of expressing yourself, like, you know, we have here, we have our way of expressing ourselves, we use that. Anybody has the right to express themselves in whatever means they can. Michael Moore was handed a microphone in front of God knows how many hundreds of millions of people. Did you really think he was not going to say something? Of course he was going to say something. I'm just sad he wasn't allowed to say more. I'm sad people tried to shut him down because, you know, the guy has something to say, and fine, you know, let somebody say something. It's not that big a deal. But you know what the real irony of this is? The same people that are saying that these celebrities should not be allowed to air their views because they have an unfair advantage. How do you think we got Ronald Reagan in the first place? You know, he was an actor. He was an actor, for God's sake. And that's, you know, he ran off his big mouth, and a lot of people listened, and they liked what he said, and he got elected president.
If you're interested, Emmanuel, I have the text of Michael Moore's speech. It'll probably take about 30 seconds to read.
Sure, go ahead. Maybe you won't be shouted down.
I can't. Well, anybody can shout me over the radio, I guess.
We can try to shout you down. Mike has offered to.
If you want. It's up to you.
I didn't actually see the speech, but this is the text of the speech.
I'd like to hear it for once.
When he got up on stage, he said, whoa, on behalf of our producers, Kathleen Glynn and Michael Donovan from Canada, I'd like to thank the Academy for this. I have invited my fellow documentary nominees on the stage with us, and we would like to, they're here in solidarity with me, because we like nonfiction. We like nonfiction, and we live in fictitious times. We live in a time where we have fictitious election results that elects a fictitious president. We live in a time where we have a man sending us to war for fictitious reasons. Whether it's the fictitious of duct tape or fictitious of orange alerts, we are against this war, Mr. Bush. Shame on you, Mr. Bush. Shame on you. And any time you got the Pope and the Dixie Chicks against you, your time is up. Thank you very much. And that was his whole speech.
That was his whole speech. And, you know, it was brilliant, too, because I think, you know, by getting all those other people up there with him, assuming that they agreed, I think they did, I think his plan was, even if he had lost, by having this agreement with all the other documentary makers, I think he would have made that speech anyway, even if he had lost the award. Huh? I'm just glad to see somebody standing up and saying something. And why is that a bad thing? You know, if somebody had said, I wish the best for, you know, our troops, I wish them every success, they would have gotten cheers. But isn't that just as political a statement because you're taking one side over another? It's hypocrisy. Now, I wanted to just read something else that appeared in yesterday's New York Times. This was a short article by Paul Krugman concerning the recent demonstrations. And we're still going to take phone calls, 212-209-2900, in the time we have left. By and large, recent pro-war rallies haven't drawn nearly as many people as anti-war rallies, but they have certainly been vehement. One of the most striking took place after Natalie Maines, lead singer for the Dixie Chicks, criticized President Bush. A crowd gathered in Louisiana, they always gather in Louisiana, to watch a 33,000-pound tractor smash a collection of Dixie Chicks CDs, tapes, and other paraphernalia that no doubt they had just bought. Yeah, brilliant. To those familiar with 20th century European history, it seemed eerily reminiscent of... dot, dot, dot. But as Sinclair Lewis said, it can't happen here. Who has been organizing those pro-war rallies? The answer, it turns out, is that they are being promoted by key players in the radio industry with close links to the Bush administration. The CD-smashing rally was organized by KRMD, part of Cumulus Media, a radio chain that has banned the Dixie Chicks from its playlists. Most of the pro-war demonstrations around the country have, however, been organized by stations owned by Clear Channel Communications. That's right, that huge chain we always talk about. They're based in San Antonio. They control more than 1,200 radio stations, and they increasingly dominate the airwaves. The company claims that the demonstrations, which go under the name Rally for America, reflect the initiative of individual stations. But this is unlikely, according to Eric Bollert, who has written revelatory articles about Clear Channel. The company is notorious and widely hated for its iron-fisted centralized control. Until now, complaints about Clear Channel have focused on its business practices. Critics say it uses its power to squeeze recording companies and artists and contributes to the growing blandness of broadcast music. But now the company appears to be using its clout to help one side in a political dispute that deeply divides the nation. Why would a media company insert itself into politics this way? It would, of course, simply be a matter of personal conviction on the part of management. Or it could, rather. But there are also good reasons for Clear Channel, which became a giant only in the last few years after the Telecommunications Act of 1996 removed many restrictions on media ownership. It could be an attempt to curry favor with the ruling party. On one side, Clear Channel is feeling some heat. It is being sued over allegations that it threatens to curtail the airplay of artists who don't tour with its concert division, and there are even some politicians who want to roll back the deregulation that made the company's growth possible. On the other side, the Federal Communications Commission is considering further deregulation that would allow Clear Channel to expand even further, particularly into television. Or perhaps the quid pro quo is more narrowly focused. Experienced Bushologists... yeah, that's a word, let out a collective aha when Clear Channel was revealed to be behind the pro-war rallies because the company's top management has a history with George W. Bush. The vice chairman of Clear Channel is Tom Hicks, whose name may be familiar to readers of the New York Times. When Mr. Bush was governor of Texas, Mr. Hicks was chairman of the University of Texas Investment Management Company called UTIMCO, and Clear Channel's chairman, Lowry Mays, was on its board. Under Mr. Hicks, UTIMCO placed much of the university's endowment under the management of companies with strong Republican Party or Bush family ties. In 1998, Mr. Hicks purchased the Texas Rangers in a deal that made Mr. Bush a multimillionaire. There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear, but a good guess is that we're now seeing the next stage in the evolution of a new American oligarchy. As Jonathan Shait has written in The New Republic, in the Bush administration, government and business have melded into one big us. On almost every aspect of domestic policy, business interests rule. Scores of mid-level appointees now oversee industries for which they once worked. We should have realized that this is a two-way street. If politicians are busy doing favors for businesses that support them, why shouldn't we expect businesses to reciprocate by doing favors for those politicians by, for example, organizing, quote, grassroots, unquote, rallies on their behalf? What makes it all possible, of course, is the absence of effective watchdogs. In the Clinton years, the merest hint of impropriety quickly blew up into a huge scandal. These days, the scandal mongers are more likely to go after journalists who raise questions. Anyway, don't you know there's a war on? That article came from Paul Krugman, yesterday's New York Times, entitled Channels of Influence. 212-209-2900 is our phone number, and Leo, I believe you had something.
Who's the chairman of the FCC?
The chairman of the FCC is, of course, someone who's related to the guy, the Secretary of State right now. Yeah, of course. He's his son.
And I mean, for the record, I'm an experienced bushologist also.
Oh, okay. I didn't see your card. Well, by the way, you know, I finally got my ACLU card. This whole thing, you know, well, actually, for a while, it's been inspiring me to do this. I finally got around to it. Thank you, Mr. Bush, for getting me to do that. But, you know, when you get the card, it's really flimsy. It's made out of paper. It's got nothing on the back. I thought I was going to get something a lot more. I mean, if I put this thing in my pocket, it'll disintegrate inside of a week.
I use my Monopoly card.
You use your Monopoly card?
One says got a jail free.
Ah, well, good for you, Jim.
You could laminate it.
You could do that. I'm not sure if you violate any terms by doing that.
Bush's father, who was railing against, quote, card-carrying members of the ACLU during his campaign, how many years ago was that, 10 years ago?
It was something along those lines, yeah. Let's take some more phone calls, 212-209-2900. By the way, Pacifica was featured in the Wall Street Journal on Monday. There's an article all about Pacifica Radio Network becoming the anti-war voice, and focused on Pacifica, on Democracy Now, and WBAI. It was we have an actual picture of it. And look, it's Michael G. Haskin's picture there on our board. War protest find an alternate channel on radio. Pacifica Network offers all peace all the time. Most successful fund drive ever. Well, interesting. I mean, it is in the Wall Street Journal. You have to realize that, but it's good that people are noticing. Let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Ken Mayers, and I just had a couple of comments about some of the things you were bringing up earlier about trying to get some reliable information about what's going on in Iraq.
Okay.
First of all, I've been following this stuff for a while, and one of the things that I try and look at are some of the experienced journalists that have been out there for a while. I know some of these people actually make it to Pacifica once in a while, like Robert Fisk. He writes for The Independent in Britain.
Okay.
And he has a website. It's www.robert-fisk.com. where he has a lot of his articles available. And one of them kind of falls apropos this evening. He wrote this article recently about touring hospitals in Iraq. The title is We Bomb, They Suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he was talking about is, I mean, he's done this a lot of times over the last 30 years or so. And he mentioned the fact that just about every Western journalist who goes into these hospitals asks people the same question, which is, do you think that these people could have been wounded by your own anti-aircraft weapons? He just said it was just kind of an odd thing when you realize that that's going to be the first question that these people get asked every time that anyone sees them. And he had a number of other observations like that.
Okay, that website one more time?
www.robertfisk. It's robert-fisk.com.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that.
The other thing that there was a good article in the International Herald Tribune on Monday.
Okay.
By John Vinocur, V-I-N-O-C-U-R.
Uh-huh.
You have to kind of walk back in their site to get it, but they leave their a week's articles up for people to look at. And in that article, he was looking over the way that the war's been covered throughout Europe. And he was basically focusing on the disconnect that there is between the journalists and the people that are editing the stuff that they report.
Yeah.
And he had a couple of good examples about that.
Have you been able to see any alternative television news from, say, other countries or anything?
Yeah, you can tap into the Italian and French and German news pretty easily over the internet.
How about if you just have a TV set, though? Are you able to do it then? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, we get, on our cable, we get things like BBC and the Italian news also comes on ours, RAI.
Okay.
Some experienced people in Baghdad also.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I know you probably got other people that are waiting to talk, so there was just one other thing that I thought I'd mention.
Okay.
It's just a kind of off-base kind of idea, but I haven't really seen anyone do with it, anything with this. I lived most of my life in Los Angeles, and there's kind of a tradition there for radio stations to do alternative voiceovers for the Rose Bowl Parade.
Yeah, in fact, I think the Firesign Theater did that on this radio station January 1st, 2000. I was there for that.
Yeah, it just occurred to me that with the Internet, it'd be pretty easy to do that kind of voiceover thing over some of the mainstream media.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder which would be funnier. But
yeah.
thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And actually, he mentioned BBC available on cable. He's probably talking about BBC America, which I just found out this past week, the extent to which that channel has been destroyed by the Discovery Network, because Discovery Network actually is the network that owns that channel. Rather than show news coverage of a different view, they've taken to just showing home improvement shows over and over and over and over again. And if you go to their website, bbcamerica.com, and just go into any of the forums there, you'll see how many people are upset by this, how many people want BBC World in this country, and you just have to wonder, who's preventing this? Why? You know, why are they trying to, keep us from seeing 24 hours a day, like everybody else in the rest of the world, different views? I mean, I think I know the answer, but who has the power to do that? That's what I'd really like to find out. Yes, Leo?
Maybe, well, the caller before this one mentioned about also media control, and I think it's the advertisers. The mainstream news media focuses...
Yeah, but how do advertisers prevent some other voice from getting in?
If you're a company, you want to have sponsors,
mm-hmm.
and the sponsors sell their products to a certain group of people. And so the news media broadcasts aims the news at the people who they think will buy the products of the sponsors, who they think are just dumb, stupid people.
Right, and that works when you have a particular channel already airing. But what I'm saying is, what something that obviously so many people want, you know, bringing that in, what's preventing that from happening?
Oh, the all the home improvement shows actually get high ratings, which is why the Learning Channel, the Discovery Channel, all of them show that during the daytime.
Right, and again, though, this is a non-commercial station that I'm talking about. There are no commercials on it. So what's preventing that from being brought in as some kind of a... You know, C-SPAN has it occasionally. They sometimes air foreign news, and that's a good thing. There are other stations out there that do this, but well, I'm talking about this in particular that the rest of the world sees.
Discovery Channel networks are all the learning networks are owned by them. And I mean,
yeah, but they don't control BBC. They distribute BBC programs in this country. They don't control it. They can't say you can't have news in this country.
But they will. I'm guessing they only show the programs that get the most ratings
on that channel. Yeah, but my point is they have this other channel that
misunderstood the whole.
So I mean that's what I'd like to find out is why that's the case, why we can't get what the rest of the world sees.
A lot of this, Emmanuel, comes down to really corporate and government intermediaries who are preventing these from reaching.
But that's what I want to see. I want to see how they're doing that. I want to see the memos that say, make sure that this view is not shown.
You may never see those, but you can go direct to the source. I mean, people can spend $50 or $150 or $100. Buy a shortwave receiver, or go spend $200 or $300 and get a GPS.
Yeah, but Bernie, the problem
I realize this, Bernie,
but the problem with that is that only the most dedicated people that have the time and the money and the resources to do all this are going to do it. I'm talking about, let's have this available so that somebody who just has maybe, a half hour to watch television after he gets home from work and has to go to bed, he can actually maybe have a chance of seeing something alternative by accident, Once you are able to open the door to that degree, you might actually have a chance of reaching people.
You're right.
All right. Let's take one more phone call, then we're going to have to get out of here. Good evening. You're on the air. Okay. Well, you're going to have to say something a little bit more intelligent than that. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
I've got a plain old telephone service question for you. Years ago...
I'm sorry, but not talking about telephone service tonight. I'm sorry. Don't like cutting people off, but we have a very strict topic tonight. Good evening. Oops. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Pretty good. I wanted just a couple things. You can stream Al Jazeera, and there's a website.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you what it is.
Okay, make it fast. You only have 30 seconds.
Okay, well, it resolved to HTTP 194.109.160.107/radio, and it's I can't seem to have lost the name of the what the link is, but that's what it resolves to. And I also wanted to say, we keep calling this a war, but it's not. It's an invasion.
That's right.
And people will defend their communities. That they don't have to like Saddam to defend themselves. So I think that's really important. We got to change our language and keep calling what it is. It's an invasion. It's not a war.
Understood. Thanks very much for that call, and that's going to have to be the last word as far as telephone calls tonight. I want to thank everybody who participated, who was a part of this. Thanks, Bernie, for being there. And we'll be back again next week with more. Stay tuned. Good night.
How can a country large as ours be scared of such a threat? Well, if they won't work for us, they're against us, you can bet. They may be sovereign countries, but you folks at home forget that they all want what we've got, but they don't know it yet. Tra-la-la-la, tra-la-la-la. Our candy and our guns, and our corporate muscle marches in behind us. But freedom's just another word for nothing left to sell. And if you want narcotics, we can get you those as well. We help the multinationals when they cry out, protect us. The locals scream and shout a bit, but we don't let that affect us. We're here to lend a helping hand in case they don't elect us. How dare they buy our products and still they don't respect us.
Tra-la-la-la, tra-la-la-la.
If you thought the army was here protecting people like yourself, I have some news for you. We're here to defend wealth. Away with nuns and bishops.
Romero!
The good Lord will help those that help themselves. I have some news for you.
We are presently moving down a dead-end road that can lead to national disaster. America has strayed to the far country of racism and militarism. It has left hearts aching with guilt and minds distorted with irrationality.
On April 4th, 1967, exactly 1 year before his assassination, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered an important speech at Riverside Church, Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam. This was his first major speech on the war and rapidly became the focus of the growing awareness of the nexus between militarism abroad and the growing economic and political repression at home. Join Riverside Church and WBAI Radio in an evening of resistance on Thursday, March 27th from 7 to 10 p.m. as we all raise our voices in objection to this illegal, unjustified war against Iraq. Some of the participants already confirmed are the Reverend James Forbes Jr., Ozzie Davis, Jimmy Breslin, Pete Seeger, Tom Chapin, the Reverend Herbert Daughtry, and other guests are signing on as contributors. That's an evening of resistance on Thursday, March 27th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Riverside Church nave at 490 Riverside Drive. For additional information, call area code 212-209-2869. That's 212-209-2869.